Hey, thanks for listening to the Shift Your Spirits podcast. On this episode, we're bridging science and spirituality in a discussion with Dr. Keith Holden about using the power of your mind to heal your body and maximize your intuition. But before I forget, a few things about the show. I've set up a Patreon page. So if you like the podcast and you want to find out how you can support my time in producing these episodes, please go to patreon.com/shiftyourspirits. Listeners who support the show on Patreon can access bonus audio, such as guided meditations and exclusive Q&A episodes. So if you have a question you'd like me to answer on the podcast, please send it in. And if you have recommendations for guests you'd like me to interview, send me those too. And of course, don't forget the Oracle segment at the end of the show. Be thinking about a question or a concern you may have, hold it in your mind, and I'll come back on at the end after the final links and credits and leave you with that extra channeled message. Okay, back to the show. I'm your host, Slade Robertson. For over 10 years, I've been a professional intuitive and the author of the blog Shift Your Spirits, where I try to write about spirituality with fewer hearts and flowers than most New Age blather. I also mentor emerging intuitives, psychics, and healers in a program called Automatic Intuition. One of the things that excites me most about doing this show is getting to speak with others who write and teach about these subjects. And on this episode, I'm sharing an interview with Dr. Keith Holden. Dr. Holden is board certified in internal medicine, trained in functional medicine, and has a special interest in the mind-body connection and spirituality in medicine. His course, Power of the Mind in Health and Healing, is a bestseller on Udemy with over 5,200 students from 119 countries. Here, I'll let Dr. Holden tell you more about what he does.
I am a board-certified physician. I am certified in internal medicine, and I'm also trained in functional medicine, which is something I came across after I graduated from med school and residency and was kind of disenchanted with the type of medicine that I was practicing. I found it was limited. I knew there were many ways to heal the whole. And so I started looking at holistic medicine and seeing what's out there and what might work, what might not work, what resonates with me, what doesn't. And I came across the Institute for Functional Medicine based in Gig Harbor, Washington. And what they are was a group of physicians that came together and said, hey, there's a better way to practice medicine. And thankfully, they've gathered all the research, and it's legitimate peer-reviewed research. And it's more research that's on the cutting edge. So not every typical physician is aware of this research that's out there. And basically, functional medicine is American naturopathy with a solid science background. And all of their conferences that they give, you start out with a one-week conference, and then you take three-day courses after that based on each system. And they teach you how to approach medicine from a way that is truly holistic. It takes into account mind, body, spirit, takes into account stress, looks at precursors that contributed to the disease that they have now, what happened in their past, all the way from the time that they were in their mother's womb. It's fascinating approach to medicine, and I'm thankful that I came across it because it really helped enrich my training in medicine, and it also helped me to realize what my true passion is about, and that's mind-body medicine. And mind-body medicine is the influence of the mind on your physiology. And thankfully, there's tons and tons of research coming out. There are plenty of pioneers that have led the way in mind-body medicine. Dr. Herbert Benson, who's with Harvard, he coined the term the relaxation response years and years ago and has written books. And now he's doing some groundbreaking research out of Harvard that shows how mindfulness and meditation actually change the way that your genes express. And it is how your genes express as to how you develop disease or develop good health. So you're not just at the mercy of your genes. There's it's called an epigenetic influence, or above the gene. And part of that epigenetic influence includes nutrition, stress management, and including meditation and mindfulness, as we're finding out with the latest research. So that's kind of my background, how I kind of evolved as I took it upon myself to learn more and more about medicine and not just stay in the rigid dogmatic box that I was indoctrinated into in medical school and residency.
Wow. I think that probably most of my audience, that you kind of described like our dream doctor, the one that we all wish we were going to. I came across this term pulsed electromagnetic field therapy when I was reading about your work. Can you describe what that is exactly?
Yeah, so way back in the 1920s, actually, there were tons of physicians using what I term electroceuticals. And these are just electromagnetic, electrical, different types of currents, from pulsed electromagnetic fields to direct currents, you name it. They were using all kind of great energy medicine devices. And then this guy Flexner came along and said, oh, wait, we need to really put a rigid dogmatic box around the way physicians are trained in the U.S. and we're gonna shut out all this quackery, you know. And so they took a dogmatic approach to the way that medicine would be trained in America, and all those electroceutical devices were shut down. And it was mainly because they didn't understand the science at the time. Some of those devices were coming from really Einstein type folks that were way ahead of their times, and they were helping people get well. And what's funny is now, you know, in 2017, if you look, every time you turn around, there's another electroceutical device being approved by the FDA for a legitimate role in modern medicine. And pulsed electromagnetic field devices, there are several on the market now. An example of one is transcranial magnetic stimulation. And this is used, it was first approved by the FDA for a refractory depression. So this was depression that's not getting better despite medication, despite being on therapy, even multiple medications. And they were finding that when they put this little device up against the skull and pulse these electromagnetic fields into the prefrontal cortex, that some of these folks were going into remission with their depression and getting really well and happy again. And so now the research on pulse electromagnetic fields, mainly using these repetitive transcranial magnetic stimulation devices, are being looked at in everything from schizophrenia to Parkinson's, you name it. There's all kind of research being done on this, and thankfully it's helping a lot of people that wouldn't otherwise be helped. So the pulsed electromagnetic field device that I used in my practice, is, and I'm not promoting this device. I'm not saying it's any better than the others, but it's the one that I came across and bought the device. It's called an OndaMed, O-N-D-A-M-E-D. And I used it in my practice with some great results. It introduces these very low-level pulsed electromagnetic fields into the body. And the good thing about OndaMed was that they had designed it so that you could use it with pulse testing. And this pulse testing was developed long time ago by a French physician called Nogier. And Nogier developed this pulse testing by just checking the radial pulse and finding that, and he mainly developed it for use in auricular acupuncture, where they're doing acupuncture just using the ear points. And he found that when he would stimulate certain points on the ear, he'd get a really strong pulse response. So it's kind of the body's way, and it's not an increase in the rate or a change in the rhythm, but it's an increase in the amplitude of the pulse wave. So basically it feels like it starts bounding. And so what it is, it's a way for the body to say, hey, I like this. Can you give me more? And it's kind of an autonomic response at the arterial wall level they don't really know exactly how it works, but that's kind of a general definition. So the OnDemand was designed to be used with pulse testing, and I liked that because it was a way to really personalize the therapy versus some of the other similar devices out there where you just had these pre-programmed and you just kind of punched a number and crossed your fingers and applied it to the patient. But the downside is that the pulse testing is not very easy for some people. For me, I'm pretty intuitive. I'm very sensitive. So it was easy for me to pick up on the changes in the amplitude of the pulse wave and thus direct their therapy. So that was the device I was interested in and used. I wish OnDemand would do peer-reviewed medical research, which they have not. And so I look next to another device called the Beamer. Beamer, B-E-M-E-R. And this is another pulse electromagnetic field device that actually their founders do legitimate peer-reviewed medical research with their devices and are having some pretty impressive results. And that's, I wish OnDemand would have done the same thing. But those are three examples of pulse electromagnetic field devices.
So let me ask you about that pulse testing thing. Now, you can apply the pulse testing similar to the way people do muscle testing, right?
Absolutely.
So describe how you do that, because you were one of the first people that I ever talked to who did pulse testing in the kind of way that I've heard of other people using muscle testing.
I use muscle testing in my practice, it's, you're right on, is you can use the pulse testing in the same exact way. And so what I do is you can pulse test others and you can pulse test yourself. So for those who, people will muscle test themselves by using their fingers. I've tried to figure that out. It never worked for me. I have a good friend that does it. And she's like, it's easy. I'm like, well, I'm glad you learned it. But I maybe I couldn't learn it because I was supposed to use pulse testing. So anyway, when you test someone else's pulse and say you want to test a nutritional supplement, you hand it to them and you've got your finger on their radial pulse. Well, when they hold it next to them or hold it, then you should get a bounding in the amplitude of the pulse wave. Now, I'm going to preface all this conversation about pulse testing with the fact that there's no peer-reviewed medical research on this. This is all anecdotal, but you know, it is a way to keep your mind open and try new things. And there is some science behind this, the pulse testing, and that there are devices out there that do monitor pulses in a very similar way to help you understand how their cardiovascular and autonomic nervous systems are functioning. So there is some science behind it, but it's not directly related. Anyway, going back to the pulse testing, you can pulse test someone, but you have to, it's like with anything, you have to practice it to get good at it. Play guitar, shoot baskets, be a good athlete. You really need to practice unless you're a prodigy, and some people are that. So you can pulse test someone that way, or myself, I will hold my finger on my carotid artery, or probably three fingers on my left neck on the carotid artery area, just enough to where I want to let the pulse come to me. And that's important because when you're pulse testing, if you just press harder, whether it's on the radial pulse or your neck, you will feel like the amplitude of the pulse wave increased because you're pressing harder. So that's the most difficult part about pulse testing someone or yourself. You've got to have be consistent with the pressure you apply, and that's something your body learns to do. And then what you really want is for the pulse to come to you. And then that really demonstrates, oh, wow, that pulse wave really picked up there. That pulse came out and jumped right at me. Therefore, it's telling me something about the body and what it's experiencing, what it likes, etc.
So this is comparable to somebody who is, say, good at using a pendulum, which I'm not, by the way.
Exactly. There are so many ways. The human body is infinitely intelligent. It's got so many redundant backup systems. It's got so many ways to tap into its system. For example, acupuncture points, they are portals into the body. It is so intelligently designed. And other people, other energy workers, they know how to tap into the body in other ways, using their hands, different combining, connecting different points on the body. It is infinite, the number of ways that we humans can work with the human body, with others, with ourselves, and improve and get better. To me, the bottom line is about its intention. It is intention. And when you set an intention, energy flows in the direction that you set that intention. I truly believe that's how it works. It's because this universe is based on energy.
So when you're talking about things like frequency-based therapies, which were some of the tools and techniques that you were talking about with the electroceuticals, right?
Right.
So what's the connection between, say, the frequency-based therapies and then the meditation type of mind-body connection? Can you, because you're very much interested in and knowledgeable about meditation in particular. So where's the connection point there, the bridge between those subjects?
Okay. So to me, that the energetic aspect of meditation, a solid point that you can make that connection is through brainwaves and brainwave entrainment. And I've been using brainwave entrainment tracks, which are usually some type of frequency as far as a repetitive pulse embedded in music. And that's the type of brainwave entrainment tracks I use. So you can range from gamma, which is really high frequencies, and I go over this in detail in my course, to beta, which typically we're in a beta predominance in our brains when we're stressed. It's a high beta is a stress state typically. Beta, the next lower level of beta is focused. Then you go down to the alpha when you start to have a predominance. You're never just going to have one type of brainwave going on at one time throughout the whole brain. That's almost impossible. I mean, Buddhist monks can do deep meditation and then put several parts of their brain into the same oscillatory state where they're having a predominance throughout most of the brain, but it's pretty rare. What you can do is trigger through using meditation and also brainwave entrainment tracks is you can trigger a predominance of one wave frequency over the other. And by frequency, I mean how fast the frequencies, the cycles per second are. And so, like I said, you start with gamma, high, and gamma states can be some of the highest states to do meditation with. Then beta, low beta, alpha, relaxation. Then you can go down to theta. And theta is where you start to have a predominance of brain waves that give you like almost a hypnagogic state where you feel like you're dreaming, but you're still aware. And I love that when I go into that space when I'm meditating. It's so peaceful to me. And then the next is delta. And if you go into a really slow delta, you're going to be asleep. And so again, it's about manipulating those frequencies of your brain waves to create a predominance of one over the other and thus have some type of psychological or impact on your consciousness at that state.
Did you have some kind of personal experience that drove you towards an interest in this? Because I mean, I know a lot of people have a passing interest in meditation, but was there something that pushed you into it, or that happened that helped you to discover the potential of it?
Well, actually, I've always been fascinated by the unexplained. Even when I was a little kid and my parents went through an evangelical phase where we were going to these church meetings where people were being slain in the spirit and speaking in tongues. I was like, jaw was wide open, eyes wide open. I was fascinated by it. And also I was fascinated by hands-on Christian healing. Catherine Kuhlman's, I can vividly remember just hearing about her and wanting to go to, and hearing about my parents having gone to one of her healing ministries and what they saw. And it was, to me, it was so fascinating. And then as I grew up and I became a doctor and started exploring all the different facets of health and medicine and healing, I said, you know, I'd really love to incorporate some of these things that seem to be unexplained but have dramatic impacts on people. And then it was just kind of an evolution of things, how it progressed. I mean, for a while there, I was a very dogmatic, indoctrinated physician. I'd be the first to call someone a quack if they were, you know, if I knew they were doing something outside of the box that we weren't trained in medical school or residency. You know, it's, you're really indoctrinated in medical school. At least I was back in early 80s, you know, early 90s when I was going through residency. It was a very indoctrinating experience, and they'll put the fear factor in you that if you're going to be a quack, then you will be ostracized. Not only that, you'll probably be sued for malpractice. So they do throw those fear factors in there, and it kind of keeps you in line. But at the same time, I'd been, since I was a little kid, I was always fascinated by the unknown and things like hands-on Christian healing. So again, it just evolved, and then I started doing a lot of reading, and I was also fascinated by psychics, and because again, that's the unknown. But you'd hear some really fascinating stories about people's interactions with psychics, and I was like, well, these people are having legitimate experiences. You can't just downplay someone else's personal experience. That's the real deal. And all these people can't be delusional, right? So I was fascinated by that. And then I started reading. Some people were saying, if you do meditation, you're going to be better at psychic experiences. You'll be a better intuitive. And I'd always known I was very intuitive. People would ask me all the time, how did you know that? Or, you know, even my patients would tell me, how did you know that about me? And I was like, doesn't everybody know this about each other? I thought I was just picking up on clues that everybody could see, but obviously everybody can't see these clues. So it was an evolution. I learned as I went along. I started studying meditation and then actually doing meditation, and I found that it was hard for me to meditate on my own without some type of support. And so that's when I started using binaural beats and isochronic tones embedded in music tracks. And I found that I could really get a deep meditation. I could go into those deep theta states and just have these crazy visuals and messages. And, you know, it was almost like I was dreaming, but I was aware I was dreaming. But at the same time, there was logical information coming through. And so that's what really inspired me to meditate more and study about binaural beats and isochronic tones, and I'd always loved energy. It just all came together, and I'm a nonstop nerd. I will study, and when I like something, I'm fascinated by it. I will read and read and read and read. But the other thing I did was I reached out to all these energy workers in my area, and I said, hey, I want to try you, your whatever you're using. And I went to tons and tons of people who are doing all different kinds of energy work just to experience it. Because to me, the truth is it found in your experience. And that's one thing I've learned, is to never let other people dictate my truth. And that was a very profound, deep meaning I've always held. And so that is also what helped me to know that to know the truth, I actually have to go out and there experience different things, study different methods, try them on myself, try them with others and see what the end result is. And that's the proof is in the pudding, right?
Yeah. I get emails from people all the time. I mean, we're talking like 11 years now. I don't think there's ever been a week or a month that's gone by that I don't get an email from someone where they mention the fact that they can't meditate, or that they've tried meditating and it doesn't work for them, or maybe they kind of get into it a little bit, but they don't know where to go with it. What do you say to someone when they tell you, I really want to meditate, but I don't know how to do it, or I don't know how to start? What kind of advice do you usually give?
You know, people are so versatile. There's so many reasons why they're saying that, depending on the individual. So I try to focus on the positive and give them the benefit of the doubt that they really are ready to meditate, because some people just aren't. And I'm not going to say that to them, but some people just aren't. And that's one reason why they're not ready to go to that level, next level in their life. But for the most part, people that are ready, then I say, okay, start with guided meditations. That's an easy way, because then you can just if you can listen to someone talk, then you can do a guided meditation, right? So there are so many apps on the in the iTunes store and Google Play and all that, Android store. There's no excuse for not having access to guided meditations. That's a good way to start. And then the other, I say, hey, why don't you try some isochronic tones or binaural beats embedded in music tracks. Use the brainwave entrainment. And there's plenty of companies out there. One of the ones that's been around the longest is the Monroe Institute, and they've been doing this for years and years and years. And then there's, if you just Google brainwave entrainment therapy, there's tons of websites that pop up. And I look for reviews to see which companies are legit, and maybe try downloading a couple of tracks and give it a shot. But a really simple way to start is with guided meditation. Now, you do have to like the person's voice, and you do have to like the energy of the person that you're listening to their guided meditation. So you may have to try a few before you find the one that you resonate with. And that's another key factor. So that's kind of the general advice I would give those folks.
What do you think are some of the biggest misconceptions that people have about meditation or mind-body healing?
Well, those are two major different things. As far as misconceptions, you know, if you look back at modern medicine, it really hasn't been around that very long as a whole compared to civilization. And there's always been doubters from the very beginning, even from the time where the very first healthcare practitioner was figuring out that there are these little hidden, at least from the naked eye, bacteria that are causing disease in people, and that they recommended, hey, you really should be washing your hands between delivering babies because there's something there that you're passing back and forth. Those people were ridiculed. I mean, it's always been that way. That's just part of human nature. If they don't understand it, or they haven't thought of it first, and they're going to poo-poo it. And that's kind of the way mind-body medicine has been, but it's growing up pretty fast in that there's so much legitimate peer-reviewed medical research coming out about mind-body medicine. And like I said, Herbert Benson was doing this years and years ago, but it's only really now starting to explode. You've got the HeartMath Institute that does research on mind-body medicine. They've got a technique about dealing with your heart space and breathing a certain way and visualizing. And they've done tons of peer-reviewed medical research that's out there. Part of the problem is people don't know where to find this research, and they don't understand the significance of it. And so when that's the case, they'll downplay it, or they'll say it's not legit. Or some people are very much into traditional medical practice, and they just want to do what the doctor says and take this pill. It's kind of a fast food nation type approach to medical care. And it's going to be easy if you want to be taken care of, not to take on your own personal responsibility to improve your health through practices like mindfulness meditation. So those tend to be the reasons why people downplay that. Okay, and I'm jabbering on because you're going to have to remind me what the other topic was.
Well, actually, let's see. What was I asking you about? Oh, the misconceptions, you know, that people have about meditation. And maybe even misconceptions could be expectations. You know, when somebody, I've had Jenny Mannion on the show and very early on in the podcast. And she's also someone who's very interested in chronic illness and the relationship between the mind body. For her, a lot of that connection was about negative self-speak and reprogramming a lot of that. So, you know, I had asked her a question similar, I guess, to what I'm kind of asking you, which is, what are the expectations you think that people get wrong when they hear mind-body healing? What should your expectations be if you're approaching this? Let's say you've got some kind of chronic illness and you want to explore this. What should be a realistic milestone that lets you know this, hey, this is actually producing some results for me?
Well, to me, for those folks, and the hardest part would be just thinking that it's going to work for you. Because if you've been sick for a while or a long time or even a short while, you can really get beaten down. It'll create depression. It'll create a lot of negative thoughts in your mind when you've been beaten down a long time by illness. And it's really hard to break out of that shell no matter what approach you take. So the first step is just baby steps and, you know, giving it a chance. Because a lot of people say, oh, that'll never work for me, I can't meditate. That's typically the response that's going to keep them from being successful, at least even starting a meditation practice. But like I said, and they say, oh, meditation's too hard. It's really not. And we've all meditated to some degree at some point in our life. If we've gone outside and watched a bird, that's a form of mindfulness meditation. When you're giving a singular focus, that's in a calming environment or with a calming attitude, that's a form of mindfulness meditation. So we've all done it. You're just trying to take it to the next level and maybe become aware of it and incorporate more of that type of mindfulness approach in your life. So I love to go outside and sit on my back porch and talk to the plants and talk to the birds. And, you know, people would think I'm crazy, but I love that energy. I'm speaking more to myself than I am to them when I'm say talking to them. I'm really in a state of grace. I'm really in a state of gratitude that I have a beautiful backyard that I can go sit in and that's peaceful with nature. That's really what I'm doing. I'm doing a mindfulness meditation with nature, and that's something very easy to do, sitting on the beach, looking at, just watching the waves, burying your feet in the sand. Those are very simple approaches to a mindfulness meditation practice that you can slowly build on that doesn't require you to even go download a meditation track and listen to it. So that's a very simple approach, and I like what, going back to your question, I think it's people will shut it down even before they realize that they've already been doing it and mm-hmm. that it's really not that hard.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's true for just intuition in general. So much of like the anecdote you had about your patients, you know, the things that you knew about them and realizing that not everyone knew that stuff. I think there's a lot of our spiritual channels or our spiritual antenna that get dismissed as part of our personality. You know, we mm-hmm. just think, oh, I'm just really good at reading people. Well, what does that mean? You know,
right.
Not everyone is good at that. So what, you know, what is that we're doing? I think one of the things that that really fascinates me about you, and when I was reading your blog, is and as I'm hearing you talk about all this technical stuff and the peer-reviewed research, and you have so much of that as a background in your course, which I'll let you talk about in detail in just a minute. But I was thinking about how you do represent a sort of translator in a way, because part of what you're doing is you're taking that research, which a lot of us would be very impressed by and moved by if we understood it. You know what I'm saying? And hearing you talk even today, a lot of what you're doing is translating for us and putting things in layman's terms, you know, taking this scientific data and being able to explain it in the context of more of this kind of spiritual context, I guess. Is that something that you, is that an intentional goal that you have?
Absolutely. I've always felt that I was here to bridge a gap, you know, say here, I mean, part of my life's purpose is to bridge a gap. And part of this bridging the gap is the gap between science and spirituality, bridging the gap between people understanding about how mindfulness and meditation can actually have significant, powerful physiologic effects on the body that can dramatically improve your health, and bridging that gap by translating some of the science and helping people understand how it works and how it could possibly work. It's kind of like being a way shower. I've always felt like I've been a way shower.
Yeah. So in 2014, you gave a speech, which, if I understand this correctly, was kind of the seed or the beginning of this course that you created called The Power of Mind and Health and Healing. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I was invited to speak at a medical conference in Longwood, Florida, not too far from my hometown, home where I live now in Jacksonville Beach, and it was a functional medicine program, and I was invited to speak, and I thought, okay, what do I want to talk about? I really want to talk about what I'm most passionate about, and that's mind-body medicine. So I came up with this title, Power of the Mind and Health and Healing, and I gathered together some of the latest research on how mindfulness and meditation change how your genes express. I talked about some of the latest research on the placebo effect and how belief influences influences your physiology in amazing ways, whether it could be a placebo effect or a nocebo effect. So that was the bulk of my talk, and it was very well received. I've given that talk a couple of times since then. One was to a open-minded group of dentists in Las Vegas. And then the most recent was I was honored to be invited to present grand rounds at University of Florida's Department of Psychiatry here in Jacksonville. Thankfully, I had taught this course live at a local integrative medicine clinic, and one of the students was the wife of the chairman of the Department of the Psychiatric Residency Program at UF here in Jacksonville at the College of Medicine. And she told her husband about me, and she was so impressed that they invited me over to their home, which was in Jacksonville Beach. And I met them, and I really resonated with them, and they liked me, and he said, I'd really like you to present grand rounds, and that's such an honor. I mean, I'm not an academic physician. I'm not involved in academic medicine where I'm in any teaching program, and to be asked to present grand rounds, which is basically once a month, each department asks an outside speaker to come in and present on a topic, and usually it's reserved to academicians, and I was invited based on my course to come speak to the psychiatry residency program here in Jacksonville, and it was extremely well received. And then based on that, I was invited to teach the fourth year psychiatry residents about mind-body medicine, and I did two more lectures. And then, you know, this just my passion. People say when you follow your passion, things will just be presented to you. And so that was bucket list stuff that I never thought would actually come to pass. And because I followed my passion in mind-body medicine, it truly came to pass, and I'm so thankful for that. And then this course is the culmination of all that and all the research that I've gathered and put together in a format that's fairly easy to digest, despite it being somewhat complex. So if you don't have a science background, you may be frustrated. So that is a caveat that I give, just because there's so much language relating to science and medicine. But again, the course is on Udemy, and Udemy hosts different instructors, and it is a bestseller in meditation under the genre. And I've got 5,200, a little over 5,200 students in 119 countries, and I've got a high rating the ratings that they give you, 5 stars. I've got a 4.8. So all that's evolved. I'm just so thankful for it.
I will definitely link to the course in the show notes so that everyone can go and check it out. But I know from past experience, the first time I ever heard anybody mention Udemy on a podcast, I had no idea what it was. So would you tell everybody what Udemy is?
So Udemy, UDEMY.com, is a online company that hosts instructors in just about any genre you can think of. And they vet their instructors. You've got to upload information and part of your course for them to vet before they'll allow you to host, before they'll host it on their website. And they have genres from how to code to how to do yoga, how to do Reiki. One of the best-selling courses in personal transformation is a Reiki course. And so it's wide open. And the good thing about Udemy is if you sign up with them and you're on their email list, they have sales all the time. So my course is $150, but they put it on sale and promote it all the time for like $15.
Oh, wow.
So, but, you know, it makes up for it in volume. They do, I can do as much of the promotion as I want on my blog or wherever else, on your podcast today, right? Uh-huh. But, you know, I've really let Udemy take the reins because that's not my forte. And so thankfully they've appreciated my courses. The students have appreciated it. It's gotten high reviews. They promote it as a bestseller. They email it all over the world. So that's why it's part of why it's done so well.
Listen, I just want to stress for everyone listening to you talk about it, this isn't just a tutorial. You know, this isn't like a, you know, 4 little 5-minute videos and a, you know, a worksheet PDF. There's a lot of material in this course. I think you have 79 lectures. There's over 5 hours worth of video. A lot obviously went into producing this. I was so impressed just by the production quality, the level of the way that the course is executed. If nobody's ever done a course on that platform before, it's really, really impressive platform. And you're right, even if you go and, you know, sign up for maybe a little free course somewhere that's in an area that you're interested in, then you will get a lot of updates about other things that you would be interested in, right? Like your kind of topical interests or whatever. So I encourage everyone to check out that platform as far as online learning. I think it really sets the bar. But even within that, as far as my personal experience, I think that your course really, really sets a high standard. And I just want to make it really clear. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on here and talk about this, because there's a lot of blog posts out there about how to meditate. And, you know, this is one of the most impressive presentations that I've ever seen on the subject. So I'm really honored that you would come on and talk to my audience about it. So,
well, that's really sweet of you, Slade. I put my heart and soul into it, and it's what I'm passionate about. So it wasn't terribly difficult for me because I'm so passionate about it. The time just flew while I was putting it all together. But I'll just give you a brief overview about the course. It's got 6 parts and it's really designed to be taken over about 6 weeks. I'd like you to do each module and then work with the meditation at the end of each module. Each module has a meditation, and each meditation has a very specific intention, from just an introduction to meditation to working with your higher self, working with your energy body. And they're guided meditations, so I'm actually walking you through the process. But there's some themes throughout this course. One is energy. I'm big on energy. Everything is made up of energy. That's the universe we live in. That's, you know, some people laugh about that. And, you know, I do discuss a little bit about quantum physics, but there's so much we don't know about energy and how the body works and how to work with it. But I teach you methods to use for such as how to transmute negative emotions, how to question your beliefs, and then figure out what your limiting beliefs are, and then how to actually remove those limiting beliefs. And I work with you on healing your own body for any ailments you might have. And then in the final module, it's really about aligning with your higher self and your intuitive self, your higher mind, I call it. I wanted to give people ways to work with different aspects of their consciousness. And our entire body's conscious. That's how it works so efficiently. And our entire universe is conscious. That's my overall belief, in that there's this prevailing energy of intelligence that we can tap into. And that's really important for intuitives that are doing intuitive work and psychics. They're tapping into that unified field of energy that exists in our universe to gather information, because energy is information. That's how sunlight turns our vitamin D, our receptors in our skin to create vitamin D. That's how sunlight communicates to plants to do photosynthesis. Energy is information. And I just try to teach in this course how to work with different aspects of your consciousness and your energy body to facilitate processes.
I love the quote, energy is information. That's a tagline for something right there. That's really cool. So what's next for you? Do you have any other big projects like this that you'd like to
bring
to fruition?
Yeah, I just published the book based on the course. And in the book, I add more personal experiences and kind of interweave my personal story of how I've evolved and my belief systems and illness that I went through and how it helped transform me. And, you know, it inspired me to dig deep and really work on processes with myself. And that's how some of these processes I developed for helping to heal myself, I've incorporated into this course. So the book's a little more personal information than the course. And some people, they learn differently. Some people like to read, some people like to listen to audio and watch videos. So I give you plenty of options. This is my first step into the field of being an author, and I've learned so much in this process. And one was, you've really got to, there's no limit to how much editing you can do with your book. I paid this company to professionally edit it, and then I paid extra to have a proofreader. I still got the book back and had 20 typos and grammatical errors, and I'm a total perfectionist. So
oh, yeah.
I just had it revised. So it isn't, the revised version isn't up yet. So I don't recommend anybody go out and buy the book just yet. It's still a work in progress, but it's almost there. And then the next thing I'm going to do is, I've already developed a idea and even started gathering the research for the next course and the next book. And it's going to be about working with your inner child. And there's inner child work books and courses out there already, but this is going to be my own personal spin. I think the biggest difference is I'm going to incorporate a lot of the science about the inner child, and people don't even realize there is science about the inner child philosophy. And it came from a huge study out of Kaiser Permanente dealing with adverse childhood experiences. And you can look this up on the CDC has a great overview of this study and its implications on their website. If you just type in adverse childhood experiences, CDC, and it's a pretty easy to review on their website, I think, as far as what the science says. But it shows that folks who have adverse childhood experiences, and they give a specific list of what they study. You know, it has to do with neglect, actual abuse, various other things. And people who have those experiences in their childhood are dramatically at higher risk for developing certain diseases, not only physical but mental diseases as they become adults. So that is the wounded inner child and how it impacts you as an adult regarding your physiology. It's fascinating stuff, and that's my next book and course.
Oh, that sounds very cool. So tell everybody where they can find your website if they want to keep up with you and everything that you're doing online.
So my personal website is www.dr-holden.com. I've been so busy with my book, I haven't updated my blog lately, but there's still plenty of blog posts if you're interested in reading that. Though I will tell you that a lot of my blog posts or segments of my blog ended up in my book just because it was my writing, and I wanted to incorporate a lot of the writing I've done thus far. And then you can find me on Udemy, udemy.com, and you can type in Keith Holden or Power of the Mind in Health and Healing, and it will bring you to my course.
Awesome. I'll put those on my blog post as well as in the show notes and link everybody so they can go straight there without having to search. Keith, thank you so much for Dr. Holden for coming and talking on the podcast about the work that you do.
Absolutely. I totally enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to the Shift Your Spirits podcast. For show notes, links, and all the past episodes, please visit shiftyourspirits.com. You can subscribe in iTunes or Stitcher or whatever app you use to access podcasts. If you're new to podcasts, it's probably that purple button on your iPhone. Click it, search Shift Your Spirits, and hit subscribe. Then all the episodes will be there for you automatically, and you can take them with you. If you want to support the show, you can leave me a rating and a review in iTunes and share it with some friends you think would be into it. If you'd like to get an intuitive reading with me or download a free ebook and meditation to help you connect with your guides, please go to SladeRoberson.com. And if you're interested in my professional intuitive training program, check out AutomaticIntuition.com. Before I go, I promise to leave you a message and answer to a question or concern you may have. So take a moment to think about that. Hold it in your mind or speak it out loud. I'll pause for just a few seconds, right now. Rise up out of your body, above yourself, and look down at a bigger picture. Don't get too caught up in all the little petty details of life, the unimportant things that don't last or matter. Your spiritual experience is your real life anyway. This is a time to pray or to meditate or to be in nature. Just take a moment to remember your connection to the divine. You are always connected. And I'll talk to you later.